Off the Ball, GAA.
I think the big thing for me is the love and passion he has for our county and for the people. He gives it absolutely everything, every single night he's there, you know.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to seven. So the Women's Super League results now: Manchester United 3, Spurs 0, Villa 0, Leicester 0, Crystal Palace 0, Brighton 1 and Everton 1, West Ham 1, halftime, Liverpool 1, Manchester City 0. 7:45 tonight, Republic of Ireland against Greece in Athens, just outside Athens, the fourth Nations League game, the boys in green. Buoyed by that 2-1 win in Finland on Thursday in Helsinki, Greece also were 2-1 winners away to England. We're going to look ahead over the next hour. Delighted to be joined by in studio by the ex-Republic of Ireland boss Brian Kerr and our football commentator Stephen Doyle. You both know each other so well from the Premier League commentaries.
Sure do, John. And every day I get to spend with Brian Kerr, I'm learning something new about football.
that's not true, but it's our last trip was a good day and a good match, and
Spurs versus the Arsenal.
Yeah. So we've been on the road a little bit together this year, which has been good.
Yeah.
And then we debate about the merits of Bohemians and St. Patrick's Athletic at length, with a different eye and perspective. So
that's interesting. Because the last time Brian, you were in studio with me here, you had Bruce Shields, who's the Bowes man, and Stephen's the Bowes man today. And the great thing about the pair of you is you're both great musos. You're big music people.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think mine is much exaggerated. My muso reputation, I think, is vastly exaggerated. But I do like a bit of music, and I love to get to the occasional gig. I don't get there often enough, but this fella is an absolute expert. But I did catch him out on the way back from the last match. There was a lad sitting beside him on the plane, and you could tell the story better than me.
It was funny because we saw him at the airport before we were about to fly out back to Dublin in Heathrow. And this fellow was wearing, it was like a take on the famous Ireland jersey from the 2002 World Cup, but it was like a jumper, a knitted jumper. Brian was like, I know, I've seen that fella somewhere on the telly. I think it might have been Other Voices or somewhere like that. I just can't think of his name now. So Brian racking his brains all the way home. We then went our separate ways at the luggage collection. And we then ended up speaking on the phone about 30 minutes later over something else. And he says, I had to ring him. He says, I met your man and I had a chat with him. And I said, I know you. I saw your other voice. And your man says, yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah. And he says, what's your name? Anyway, he said, Cello. I think it's a play on Cello tape. So he's from Clondalkin. Cello is the artist's name. And Brian says, what are we up to anyway? He says, well, I was over in London.
How's it going? Are you doing okay? Are the gigs? Are you getting a good few gigs? Yeah. And he said, I've just been over in London signing the record deal. And I said, well, that's fantastic, because it did look very happy, I thought, on the plane.
And then, you know, the thing is, he actually, Cello was a grime artist, and he got his selfie taken with Brian. He said, I can't wait to show me that, this and all. And he actually got back to me on Twitter the other day saying, I was delighted to meet Brian. He said, my Champions League nights now are totally different after meeting the great man, you know. But he's actually, he's a rapper. He does grime. And
what's grime?
Great artists.
It's not like Ashley Grime.
No, sorry, I think it's actually drill.
It's not like something you grime, find so. In your chimney.
Or down the back of the couch.
I'd be hoping to find money there, Brian.
But I suppose it's one of the many spin-off genres from hip-hop over the years, and especially in London, you've had grime, you've had drill, all that kind of stuff. So I think he's more down the drill genre, but a lot of heavy bass and stuff and rapping over. But he's really, really good, I have to say. And do you know something, Brian? Actually, it made me think, because I know you've done an awful lot of work with Sari, and you've done an awful lot of commentary on social issues in Ireland and how the many different, and I suppose even looking at the Irish soccer team now, the national team, where we've got so many people from diverse backgrounds, you know, families coming from all parts of the world, and that has led to us having players from many different backgrounds, which is brilliant. But I also have to say the music scene in Ireland has just gone into an absolutely brilliant space, because I used to play in bands and I used to be involved in music back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I used to play gigs in Eamon Doran's Temple Bar Music Centre, which is now the Button Factory, Whelan's, all that kind of thing. I was in recording studios, so I'd know a lot about music and the music business, and especially in Ireland. And in the early 2000s in Ireland, there was a lot of, it was singer-songwriters, it was three or four lads with a guitar singing fairly kind of maudlin kind of music. And I think now what's happened over the last couple of years has just been this incredible burst of music talent. You've got everything from, you know, you've got, you know, the likes of Cello. There's great hip hop scene all around Ireland, especially down in Limerick. You've got Denise Chyla. You've got
Jazzy.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. You've got a great drill scene up in Drogheda as well. But then you've got, you know, the more kind of, I suppose, like your Fontaines DC. There's a great band called Gurriers now have a debut album out. Another brilliant band, I have to say. I'm not sure what part of Dublin they're from. They're called Bedrooms. I'd recommend anybody listen to their album. Good.
Three or four.
It's a mix of kind of West Coast harmonies, old school West Coast harmonies.
Is this stuff mainstream? Is it being promoted mainstream?
Yeah, it's all. We're talking mainstream music here, John. You know, but I suppose what the point I'm going back to then is that we've got so many people from different backgrounds getting involved in music, and I think it's just adding to what is already a very rich tapestry of music in this country and culture, all that kind of thing as well. I'm not like, I do like art and stuff, but I'm sure you could probably see the same if you went looking at the Irish art scene at the moment, you know. And I think with all the stuff that's gone on over the last year, with so many negative discussions and talks around people coming to this country from elsewhere trying to make a better life for themselves, I think if you look at sport, culture, art, music, all that kind of thing, you will see why it is a good thing to have so many people from so many different backgrounds living in this country.
You see an interconnected nature to it. What about the sweet music now since Thursday? Are you feeling a bit better about the national team?
Going back to what Stephen was saying, and you introducing me and putting me in with Stephen in that same category, now you realise why I'm saying I haven't a clue compared to where he was at and talking about being in bands. I might have been in some of those places watching bands, but never. I think I was on the stage once in the Button Factory in the campaign to save Talca Park. That's that was right, about the extent of my appearances on the stage. Once in Vicar Street as well, I was on the stage in a tribute night for Ronnie Drew, and I was asked to read one of Ronnie's stories, which was an amazing honour altogether to have that. But
were you Ireland manager at the time?
No, it was in very recent times, not too long after Ronnie died. I think it was anniversary of Ronnie's death. No, not at all. I was Ireland manager. It was hard to get to gigs because I was busy on Wyskow. No, I was busy going about. But just to re-emphasise what Stephen is saying, the contribution of the new population in Ireland to music and the arts is brilliant, and there's no doubt that it's livened up the scene dramatically, and the kind of cross-pollination between the different backgrounds and people. I was watching the spin-off from Other Voices the other night, and there's a lad on, I think he's living in Leitrim, Mohammed, second name escapes me, but he was playing some sort of a sitar.
I know the chap, I can't think of his name, it was fabulous.
he had two, I'd say more traditional Irish artists playing with him at the, and the sound was fantastic. And I think this cross-pollination, as I described, between traditional Irish music and the traditional Irish music scene is a really interesting change in what's going on here. And I like it. I did predict what's happening in football many, many years ago when I was involved as technical director with the FAI and managing the youth teams. I emphasised the development officers that time what an opportunity we were going to have in the future with a different type of players who are going to be coming here from maybe of African background, who would be more powerful, stronger, faster, definitely faster. And that, you know, there would also be an impact from the people who came from, say, more the Eastern Bloc countries, because they would be coming from a background of let's say, a tougher lifestyle, harder to make things, harder to get opportunities in life. Maybe families of army background and that type of background of toughness and strength and resilience and so on. And I think we're starting to see that now through the different teams, through the underage teams, massively in the League of Ireland academies right across the board, and of course in the national team with the impact of, you know, the most obvious players now of say even Adam Adair, Mitchell Dozy, Ogbeni, Festi the other night, and loads more. James Abanka playing the 21s that I got to know James quite well. But there's loads of those players who are going to help us to have a much better team. So just what you said about, was I feeling happier about the other night? Of course I was. I was delighted for everyone. Having been around it a little bit in March last year. You know, I didn't get majorly close to a lot of the players over that span of time, but I got to know them a little bit and admire them. And I got to see how hard everybody was working to try to get results in the games. John got results first two matches. When I was there, we didn't get the draw with Belgium, and we lost narrowly to Switzerland with my mate's goal from the free kick. And then you got the result with Hungary winning the game. They had a hard match. I mean, I wouldn't have picked those four fixtures that John got at that time going to Portugal, 3-0. But I could see how I thought excellent the work was in terms of detail, the preparation, the work in the background, the strength and conditioning work, the whole assessment and detail that was gone into in terms of preparing the players, monitoring the players' feedback, the players' interest in the information that was being fed to them and their ability to absorb information. I remember going back to when I was manager myself, I think there was a bit of criticism around from a good few people. You might have one or two of them around here today, but some of the criticism was about that I was giving them, I think they might have used the phrase paralysis by analysis or something weird like that, because I was kind of doing fairly detailed video stuff at the time. There was nothing over scientific about it, but and really it was kept quite tight and quite short, because I understood that the players' time span for watching stuff and staying concentrated was quite limited. That has changed completely now. Looking at the modern player, they're used to this from a young age, as they are at League of Ireland clubs and the underage teams now in the League of Ireland clubs as well. They're using all that. I was talking to a fella, interestingly enough, last night in the Thomas House, Thomas Street, another place that you probably frequented now and again because of the music vibe in there. And this lad was telling me he's involved in under 15 girls team, and they're videoing all the training and showing the girls the videos after training and the matches and that sort. So it's down. So I think the modern players, both men's teams and girls teams, are used to having feedback, giving, taking up analysis, watching stuff, being prepared for games. And you heard the manager saying this week they didn't do a lot of training, but they had 5 meetings. I'd say some of those meetings were also definitely, I would have no doubt, was video analysis content in there and detailed stuff about the game with Finland. And there's probably been, and I haven't had a lot of time between the travelling. It's a long way down from Finland to from Helsinki down to Athens, and would have been recovery. They didn't go, they stayed on Thursday, didn't they, after the game Thursday night. Mm. And they travelled on Friday, so they would have trained probably Friday and maybe a short training session yesterday. So not a lot of time to do detailed on the field tactical work. Mm. So a lot of it been done by video now. So
Yeah, I was delighted for them the other night. I was delighted for everyone involved, the staff, I was delighted for the new manager, but probably more particularly the backroom team around the manager. And you saw the reaction at the end of the match. It was a big hugging session when the final whistle went, as they are really top class. Paddy McCarthy and John O'Shea and Jared Dunn and all the other lads walk around the team, Tony McCarthy and all the strength and conditioning guys. They're really top class people. And I think there's massive potential within the team. There's a lot of doom and gloom. We were all fed up, and poor old Glenn Whelan let go on Vision the night we were on after the loss to Greece. But I think that was frustration with Glenn, because he'd been, he'd 91 caps as a Glenn. 81. He said it was 91 to me. But okay, Glenn was involved in a lot of success and teams that were competitive every tournament and every qualification. If they didn't make it, they nearly made it. And he's just looking at it almost from a supporter's point of view as well. It's frustration. But we all felt that doom and gloom after defeat to England, defeat to Greece, first two games the group began and are gone. We're gone that chance. But the other night was a bit of hope, it was a bit of light. And, you know, we'll talk in more detail about them.
What do we get right there tonight?
To be honest with you, John, I don't think, I think tactically, and I think regards the team and its shape, I don't think there was an awful lot. It wasn't a good performance, I don't think, overall. The best thing about it, I think, really was the fact that the players did show that fight and determination to get back into the game and then to eventually win the game. First comeback win. It's been well documented over the last couple of days since Kazakhstan back in 2012. So that was excellent. There was times I was looking at the two teams and I thought the Irish shape was very buckety. It was all over the place, you know what I mean?
That's a great word, buckety. I haven't heard that one for a while, right?
But Finland, even as poor as they are, their shape was really good throughout the match, you know, and they just don't have the quality of player to take on a team, even like Ireland, say, that have players playing at a better level. So I do think the Irish shape and all that kind of stuff. Now, I don't think that's a fault of the players. I don't think it's a fault of the management. This is FAI stuff, not appointing the manager on time and not giving him the maximum amount of time to get his team ready for this tournament.
I think you're dead right. I feel sorry for the manager in the position he's in, because I would say, sorry for cutting across, in my head I'm saying he's going through the experimental phase at the moment with the players. He's played different shapes. They've played the first game in England, it was five. It was a five at the back. We were forced into a five at the back situation, and it was two up front off the front man, and it was Adam Ida, and then the second match Smodic played centre forward because they're waiting on Evan Ferguson to be fit, and then Evan Ferguson plays. So we've had three different centre forwards, we've had three different right backs, although we've had wing backs and right backs, and in the centre midfield, Alan Brown wasn't in the squad. He wasn't in the squad for the earlier games. Then he was in the squad, and then he starts in the match, and now he's out of the squad. And Will Smallbone has played, and he's out now, obviously through injury. So the centre midfield, Cullen was out injured, didn't play. So the midfield combination, whether it's two or whether it's three, has been changing. The right back situation has constantly changed. Scales didn't play in the first two matches under new manager, and now he starts in the third match and play as well. And as I said, there's been three different centre forwards, and Smodics has played in the left wing and he's played in centre forward. Malumbi, Knight, Brown, there's been various combinations in there with Cullen. But he wasn't in the squad, and now he's back in the squad and he starts the game.
Yeah.
So what I see is the manager experimenting, not knowing, and where he should have had the four games that John had my mind made up, and sure John had, about a lot of the players that were in for the two games while I was helping out on the fringes, and then the other two games I would have had. And I'm sure if the manager had those four matches, there would have been less of the experimentation going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he said himself last week, he said, I've had just one day on the training pitch before the game against Finland with all players fit and ready to train. So that's one. He's essentially had one day of training before each of the games, because as Brian highlighted earlier about the travelling to Athens, the limited training time they're going to have now ahead of this game. So it's I would have sympathy with the manager and the players for that, because when you look at the shape, and like I commentate on Belarus Luxembourg, the last international window for Virgin Media, and I was looking at those two teams, and even though they're poor quality sides with the players and stuff, their shape was really good. Was both structure. Sides, they both knew all their positions, they knew where to be. Whereas you look at the Irish players the other night, and every now and again Josh Cullen's looking around, he's kind of going, oh, am I the right distance from, you know, my midfielder here, am I the right distance from my defence? They all look just a little bit unsure of where they should be or what they should be doing.
They're not well drilled, is what
that's
you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to cause
problems. He doesn't strike me as something you want.
I do think it got a little bit better in the second half. I'd have a couple of issues with the team that he picked, and also I'm just wondering, did he hang his hat on Collins as a captain just a bit too quick? Because Nathan Collins, this mistake that he made against Finland the other night, this isn't the first time for him. You might remember the game that Brentford played last December against Wolves in the Premier League. He was a foul for 3 goals. Brentford lost 4-1 to Wolves. He was at fault for 3. The first mistake that he made was a carbon copy of what he did against Finland the other night. He also made mistakes in their defeat to, or their draw with Aston Villa last April as well.
I remember an Everton game as well.
Ivan Toney had a row with him coming off the pitch, and the manager had to talk about that. And I just wonder, and I'm not saying he should be taken out of the team, but your captain has to be sharp. Your captain can't be making mistakes like this. And if Nathan Collins, he's shown now that he hasn't learned from those mistakes in December, you know, like that should be something he should be able to deal with there against Finland the other night. He should be able to deal with that without any issue or any confusion, whatever, even if it's just getting the ball up the pitch, get it away from the goal. But I think that's a major concern.
He didn't have a particularly good game. I really like him. I think he is real captain material, going back to when he was a young lad. He was captain of, I think he was a captain of Stoke at 19 or 20.
Yeah.
But he is real captain material. His personality, I heard the lads mention his background yesterday talking with you, and there's no doubt about that. But he had some difficult matches for Ireland. He was a fault on both the goals against Greece last time out. There's been other games where he's made errors. And I agree with you about the captaincy thing. Seamus Coleman should be captain.
Deserve to be in the team? Should he be in the team?
I think he should be in the team. But both themselves, the alternative to him at the moment is Andrew Omabamadeli.
He's not playing.
Or O'Brien, who is left out of the squad, who did nothing wrong to be left out of the squad, other than he's not getting his game at Everton.
But Collins, O'Shea and Scales, two centre backs.
As a pairing, I don't think Darragh O'Shea has played particularly well either for Ireland, and I think he's a top player. I think he's gone. And I was discussing with Gary Brand the other night as to why, like, Darragh O'Shea is playing right sided, right back the other night. You said it was a bit bockety. I agree with you. And I heard the lads talking about it yesterday, that it was quite clever at times, that we had this little bit of fluidity about the back four, and they were talking about and in possession defenders, a number of players while we're in possession it's a 3, and when we're out of possession it's 4. Football's always been like that. When you lose the ball, you get players back, get your shape. If you were playing with a back four, before these phrases come in, Noel O'Reilly used to go mad about the phraseology of the game rather than the practicality of the game. We'd say, support the ball on your side, beside the full back. When we have it, get up, overlap if you can. Sometimes you'll be going inside, but we weren't thinking about, so now we're in possession and have we 3 at the back. We're saying we're attacking, your fullbacks get up, you might be left with 2, depending on what sort of a manager you were, how adventurous you were. You might say one the fullback stays and one goes. So this, the phraseology has changed, but the style of the game hasn't that much, about the emphasis on the number of players. So Darragh O'Shea was playing right back, as far as I'm concerned, and he wasn't great in the position for a lad who was rated one of the fastest players last season in the Premier League. There was a ball player behind him in the second half of the game, and he was beaten to it by the player. He looked like he was comfortably going to get there, and he tried to play it out towards the touchline, and the lad nicked it, and it ended up a bit of a scrambly. And I went, "Wait, he doesn't look comfortable to me in that outside way." And then he played on the left side in the match against
the match against England, he was on the left side with Brady outside him. So Collins in the middle, Coleman is right, and then Martin Doherty is the other side. And he wasn't particularly comfortable. So I'm wondering, why is it? Is it to do with he was playing at Burnley and they wouldn't have a lot of the ball and they were pinned back a fair bit and they were low block, to use the modern phrase. And Nathan Collins is saying, Brentford, low block, lots of players around you, counter-attack, early ball up to the front man, not Tony now. But now with Ireland, we want them to be up and the space behind you, and it's dealing with that space. I heard Richard talking about it and Gary Breen, you've got to anticipate these things quicker, read it and deal with it. And they're not doing that particularly well.
See, I think Darragh O'Shea is better in the centre because he does read the game so well. I was thinking back to, I remember December 2022 games really stuck in my brain when he was playing at West Brom. They played back-to-back away matches in December that year against Man City and Liverpool. So 2020, we're talking two great teams at their peak then, and they drew 1-1 in both games, and O'Shea was brilliant because he was getting to the right positions in the box every time to stop everything. He was sensational. So that's 4 years ago. You know, I just think to have him in the centre playing in his normal positions the way you want to be, maybe you could put him and Collins in a centre-back pairing. Stick Scales out on the left. Like, Scales has played as a left wing-back for Shamrock Rovers. He's played left-back.
We have to come to Robbie Brady at some stage. So Robbie Brady was out of the picture. Stephen didn't pick him, I think, for about a year. And then John O'Shea, I remember I discussing with John about the squad he was going to pick. I wasn't trying to have influence on it. I was just asking him because I'd gone to a couple of games and watched some players. And he said, I'm bringing Robbie Brady back in. We need his experience. He said, and I said, yeah, great, fine. I wasn't going to say you shouldn't go that road. He hasn't been playing too much at Preston. And I think it was a great show. And he's come back in. The only match since John was the manager that Robbie Brady hasn't played particularly well was against England. But other than that, I'd say he's been our most consistent player in the game. Incredible game the other night, I thought. Playing with Smodic, who was not an outside left, playing the left side. But they found a way to link up, and Smodic's going on the inside and drifting in where he's better. Sometimes it was Robbie Brady drifting inside. Apart from a bad header early in the match where he had the ball down the middle of the field and get them bit fair, I thought he had a really, really, really good game. But should he not be the captain in the current situation? The
oldest player, isn't he?
Oldest player, 32. And comfortable in himself, delighted to be back in. The rest of the players all respect him, spoke so well after the game. I didn't see the bit where he had to go to showed a little bit of discontent at half time and the crowd had to go. But, you know, should he not be Seamus Coleman? But look, these are finer points for the manager to work out for himself over a period of time.
What about the forward positions then? Because it was Ferguson and Azaz and obviously Schmaddock's in the mix. Like, are you looking to see any kind of changes then this evening?
Well, I think if there are obviously a lot of discussions going on with Brighton about Evan Ferguson's well-being. I thought the other night there was a little bit of lack of sharpness with him compared to the Evan who hit the scene so well in the Premier League and was scoring goals at such a young age. But there were, we don't need, you know, Hagrimsson to tell us what great potential he has and how much of a player he sees in him. We saw him, we've seen him, we know, and we just want him to be fit. And I thought he was getting a lot nearer to it the other night. There was little moments when he linked with Smodic a couple of times. When he had the chance with the shot on the right hand side, the angle got tight and he may have scored had he been a little bit sharper. But in the 20 minutes that he played in the second half, very good. So I think he'll start tonight if he feels right.
Yeah.
As I said, in the three matches that the Icelandic man has had so far, he has started the first match with Adam Idai, didn't go well against England, didn't hold it up well enough, and he's not playing regular either at Celtic. He's coming on for Celtic. Smodic's played in the second match and did all right without much support, but you can see he's better if he's playing with somebody, I think, Sammy. And then the match of the night was better with Evan there, with Finn not too far away, and Smodic's coming in. I'd like to see him somehow getting Evan Ferguson with Smodic in the central position, but I don't know if he'll achieve that tonight. He's got to take on board the fitness levels of all the players.
I just think, because it's interesting what you say about Smodic. I was looking at his stats for Blackburn last season. He played 47 times for Blackburn Rovers last season, scored 33 goals, got 4 assists. He played on the left once in those 47 appearances. He played attacking midfield 34 times, scoring 25 goals, and played centre forward 12 times, scoring 12 goals. So to me, that
you
is
said attacking midfield. So that's so, playing so number,
as a,
10,
as a number
the way,
10. Sorry,
the way
yeah.
as Fionn, as the 10, Fionn yeah, yeah. played the knife in.
Exactly. Yeah. So okay. I always think of Johnny Giles in these situations. When John Giles was analysing Ireland when he was on TV, he'd always say, "Put your best players in their best positions." And why can't you do that with Sammy Smodics? Maybe play Robbie Brady on the left-hand side.
Because he's now played seven matches for us and he has spent most of the time running up and down the left side, chasing the opposition full back.
There was a moment in the game the other night where Smodics drops in between the midfield and defence, the Finland midfield and defence, collects the ball in the half-turn. The ball out was from Scales. And he collects the ball in the half-turn, jets off down the middle, and he played it out to Ferguson, I think it was, and they create a chance from that. So you're thinking, this is what you need. You need Sammy Smodics playing in the centre of the field where he's going to do more damage. He can score goals, he can make assists, he can drop deep, collect the ball, release another player. And I just think out on the left, you're losing far too much of the talent that he has.
Mm. What about the midfield? I mean, that's maybe been a question mark. Do we have enough in the middle of the park to be competitive, like with Cullen and Malumbi there at the moment? And
John used Will Smallbone beside Josh Cullen, and I think he was right to have two. I think Will Smallbone is going to be a very good player. He's still an emerging player to a degree. He's just over the age for the 21s, isn't he? He's only 22. But he's got his place in Southampton. They're having a difficult time. Now he's got an injury, but at least he was playing the Premier League and they were trusting him in that position as well. I think he's going to be good enough. But we're going through this period of waiting on some of these players to be gone. I mean, I was critical going back to Stephen Kenny about the selection of some of the younger players, and I didn't think they were good enough to win the matches, and that was my complaint with them, and that was proved to be true, unfortunately. But now some of them are a few years on. I think Josh Cullen is very competent in there. He's got a fierce range of passing. It's usually tight and neat. But he has also learned from the concession of the goals that have been conceded in that central area just outside the box, like Greece did in the 2-0 match, the first goal. And I think that's why we've got to have two in there, because the mobility bit of it. We need a second person in there. So we've seen a little bit of a juggle around with Smallbone, Alan Brown, Jason Knight, Malumbi, and the other night it was a Knight and Cullen. Now, there wasn't anything great happened. There was certainly no real intent of build up through the middle of the pitch. That's fair enough. They were showing for it, but I think they knew they weren't going to get it, that Finland were onto them, and they were prepared to play it past them. Then when it's played past them, it could be played fairly accurately, and then you get up behind it. There'll be some games we'll be allowed to play through it. It would be interesting to see if it's just the quality in there, the quality of the pass, and Jason Knight and Jason Malumbi, both energetic players, hard working scrappers, I'd call them. But the quality of passing and delivery. I think that's why the manager went for Finn in that position the other night. The quality of his passing didn't quite, there was some lovely little neat stuff that he was involved in. I thought it passed some people by. I saw it, other people didn't. But there was some passes didn't work out for him. But he can see a pass. I think Will Smallbone can see a pass as well. Getting that balance right. And if there's, I think young Morden, when he comes along, has great potential, played in the 21s. I didn't see the match. I heard the lads mention him yesterday. He's really going to be a very good player. But at the moment,
Taylor, Brian, I have to say, I was impressed listening to him last week, just the way he spoke about being quite annoyed or frustrated that he wasn't being called up. And I just thought that sounds to me like a fellow who really, really wants to play and do well.
Yeah,
he's playing
good
Premier League.
Physicality.
I just wonder what you thought about him.
Well,
I didn't see
much of him. We covered the game recently, the 2-2 draw
with Villa,
and he was very good in that match. You know, he came on quarter now in the second half, and he was very impressive, good physique about him, direct and so on. Maybe he'd get a goal tonight. We don't know.
It seems like with the manager that he's not hostage any baggage or past or anything, that he seems to be a guy who sleeps well at night. There's two interesting things that he said. First of all, he's a sore loser, he hates losing. And the second thing is he wants his teams to hate playing against us. So
John, that's really basic stuff. Like, you know, he's a sore loser. I don't know anyone. I mean, I always slept well, when no matter what I was doing, managing who I was managing, Ireland. I slept well, didn't I didn't have any difficulty.
No, but when I looked at Stephen Kenny, though, I kind of felt, did this guy care too much?
Yeah, there can be. I don't know.
Is the detached nature of maybe?
Maybe that's a good thing. Yeah. You know, you could be right in the little bit there, but he'd be a sore loser, wouldn't take out anything out of that. If he's able to detach himself a little bit, that's good too. I tell you what is a good thing for him. I don't know if he is going to live here, what's happening now on that. He says it's too expensive, can't find a place. I would have thought the FAI would have sorted that one out in the contract negotiations, given they had a bit of time beforehand. But I used to find when I was manager of Ireland, there was no getting away from it. You know, the next day, the day after, next day, a month after the last match, you couldn't go anywhere without somebody saying to you, either well done or a bit unlucky in that one, or how do you think it's going to go, or some comment about the team. There was absolutely no getting away from it. But when I was with the Faroes, and I used to leave the Faroes the day after the match, I found when I got home, it was much more relaxing. Even though I hadn't switched off from the Faroes, it was much more relaxing because people didn't have a comment on it. The comment might have been, "You did all right, and we might have lost 5-1, but people just be nice to me and say, "You did all right against France." So I said, "Yeah, it was only 5-1 or 5-0, or whatever it was. It was Italy, I think it was 5-0 France." But, you know, people had a different vision of how you were doing in the job.
It's the biggest
and
job
was,
in the country.
So going out of it can be good. And that's, I realised why it was probably a bit more enjoyable for Mick and Trapattoni to a degree, Charlton and so on. When you're living here, it's much more difficult in terms, there is absolutely no getting away from it.
Getting your petrol, getting your paper,
getting anything. But I like the manager's demeanour, and I like the way he talks about the game.
He's very... Look, obviously, he's a dentist, and to be a dentist, you have to be a very intelligent person. So he does come across as a very intelligent man.
He has to be a very accurate person with the tools. I don't know whether he'd be fierce. Make a mistake.
I was in there on Friday, I tell you, and they told me, well, you don't need to see it until the new year.
I was the same, John. Come back in 6 weeks. I was a lawyer. Quick look, but just be right.
It's the fluoride foam, I can tell you. That's what it is. The fluoride foam. That's a secret. Anyway.
Maybe Holgrim's can put you in the chair, but the dentist chair, I should say. But he... No, because I just think as well that the players need clear, concise communication in the dressing room. As well as his press conference, he's handled tough questions really well. He hasn't courted any controversy in press conferences or put a foot wrong.
Other than not turning up for the press conferences early on. And then you look at it, he's very competent. And why invite that controversy and put John up? And that's what he did early on, which I think was a mistake, which I think he's learned from. Putting John out there and putting John in a sticky position wasn't fair to him, I think, again. Yeah. So I think he got that wrong.
Yeah.
But now you look at him, he's competent doing it.
Yeah, but I think from his public appearances, I think what we can garner from that is that in the dressing room, he's a very clear communicator with the players, and I think that's what they need. He seems to be very good at delegating as well to his coaching staff. He was talking before this match about, look, the fitness professionals I have here in the staff, they will look at all the data of the players, they know the players' history, and they'll be able to relay that information to him then before he picks his team, which is all very good. And he seems to have, you know, the staff are all really involved, like nobody's, it's a real team effort, so to say. And I think that's something they need as well, is that, like, you look at the Spain team that won the European Championship, and De La Fuente really fostered that sense of, you know, a familial kind of a feel within that squad, and that really helped them to drive on and win that championship. Now, obviously, we're on a different level here, but I think, you know, fostering that kind of team spirit and bringing everybody in together, the staff, the players, all that kind of thing is really important. And for him to be able to communicate to them all really well, I think is important as well.
Football commentator Stephen Doyle and the ex-Republic of Ireland manager Brian Kerr talking about the Republic of Ireland. Looking ahead to the game against Greece tonight. We're back after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is Off the Ball Sunday. John Duggan with you through to seven. Delighted to have the ex-Republic of Ireland manager Brian Kerr and our football commentator Stephen Doyle in studio for a look ahead to the Republic of Ireland against Greece. 7:45 start. The England team is in for their match away to Finland, a 5 o'clock kickoff. So Dean Henderson in goal. Walker, Gahey, Stones, Alexander Arnold. We also have Rice, Angel Gomez. And then we're looking at the forward players Grealish, Bellingham, Palmer, and Harry Kane, the captain. The Greeks. We know what the gifts they can bring, Stephen Doyle. 3 defeats in 18 months. How are you feeling about their trajectory? Obviously, an emotional week for them with a very sad passing of George Baldock, and they won at Wembley.
Yeah, it's. I actually saw, me and Brian covered a game that Baldock played in, that Sheffield United 3, Manchester United 3 at Bramall Lane a couple of seasons ago. Unbelievable game. Sheffield United were 2-1 up, Manchester United scored 2 then to make it 3-2 before a late Ollie McBurney equaliser, and Baldock was a real key part of that Sheffield United team that came up to the Premier League twice. He got them promoted, helped them to promotion, and just really sad, isn't it, to see a man of that age, just 31 years of age, passing away. And I can't imagine how all those Greece players are feeling this week, because I would imagine they went out at Wembley full of determination, adrenaline, and inspired to go out and try and beat that England team. There was, the BBC were reporting that day that a request from the Greek FA had been turned down to postpone the game. Had been that the English FA wouldn't agree to it. Now, as I said, that they were reports from BBC sources. You'd imagine they were good, and if that was the case, you would wonder, were the Greece players also, you know, driven on by that as well? Maybe a little bit of ill feeling towards the England team going out onto the pitch because of that as well. And they went out and put on an absolutely incredible performance, and maybe could have scored 3 or 4 on the night. VAR obviously disallowing a couple of goals. So I just wonder, coming into this game tonight, will there be an emotional drain there? Will they be, after getting themselves up for that game against England, what kind of condition are they going to be? Not physically, more so mentally, because they've just lost a teammate. I can't imagine how those players are feeling now. And to get themselves up for another match in what's been a really hard emotional week, that's going to be really difficult for their manager. To do that and to get them motivated again. And I just wonder, will that maybe play into Ireland's hands? I don't want to sound, you know, hard and cold with, I'm just kind of looking at this factually. But it's funny, Greece, I was there a couple of years ago and managed to catch a couple of club games in Athens. Went to see Panathinaikos play. They've moved out of their old ground into the Olympic Stadium, which holds about 75,000, and you had about 18,000 supporters watching that game, Panathinaikos. And then I got tickets to see Ike Athens playing Giannini, and I went down with the Ike fans, who were the away team on the night, and you're obviously in with all the Ike ultras, and it was absolutely incredible. The atmosphere was just unbelievable. I brought my partner Kira with me that day, and that was the first time she ever had a football match, and she was in with all these Ike ultras.
You're still together.
But she doesn't go to football anymore. But, she couldn't take Daily Milk on a Friday night after that.
Neither could I. But the interesting thing was talking to Greek football supporters at the two games, was the national team didn't really figure in the conversation much. The national team, it's a funny one. They really struggled to kind of get bums on seats and to get people to games. We were just looking at the numbers for the last couple of home matches in the same ground that they're going to be in tonight, Piraeus, which is a port town in Athens, and it's about a 33,000 seater stadium, and they got about 17,000 for the Finland game. Now, Brian, correctly saying that, you know, with this,
I think in the circumstances tonight, you know, with them having won the three games and particularly beating England in the way they did, the way they played, and wasn't a fluke, I think there'll be a massive response. I think that'll make it more difficult for Ireland. That'll be a full stadium, but maybe to be a little bit less passionate, because all the most hostile people would be deluded by the interested onlookers. But I suspect that won't be the way.
Yeah, we've got about 3 minutes left, and sorry for this, Brian, we're running out of time. But what are you looking for this evening? What are you hoping for? And what are you predicting?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for us. I hope we can continue on the other night, not coughing up as many chances as we did, because they got far too many chances Finland had in the game. After 1-1, they got three good chances to go to a 2-1 lead before Robbie Brady got that sensational winner with Festi's cross from the right-hand side. I think I'm looking for a solid performance. I'd like to see us looking solid defensively. I'd like to see the midfield players get passing the ball better to the front man, and I'd like to see Smodics playing off either Ida or Ferguson in the centre, although I think the manager would be tempted to sit on the team he played the other night and be fairly close to that. If Chidozi is not fit, maybe Festi would start on the right hand side. But I don't see drastic changes, because he got a result the other night. The temptation is always to stick, but I think it'd be hard going. If we got a draw, it'd be a great result, because we've not done well. We got a draw out there in 2002. Just when Don Givens was the manager, I was at the match. Brutal match, 0-0 draw. Glenn Crow played centre forward. League of Ireland player at that time, wasn't many getting the game. Since then, they've beaten us four times. And they beat us 2-0 last match. It's a month ago. They beat us handy enough without playing very well themselves. Didn't play great when they beat Finland 3-0 either. Finnish goalkeeper gave them a goal. They're not that good. They played very well against England the other night. Tactically got it right. I think it could be a hard one for us tonight.
Stephen?
I think Ireland can get a draw from this, definitely. I do think there'll be a bit of an emotional drain on those players, and I think it'll be very hard for themselves to get up and play a full 90 minutes at their best. And I think if Chidozi Ogbeni is fit, it'll be great to see him start. And I think Ebisetti coming off the bench again, rather than starting him tonight, get him coming on for the last, don't give him 15 minutes, give him 25, 30 minutes. And when the Greeks are maybe starting to tire, maybe a little bit after 60, 65 minutes, send Ebisetti out there to try and beat a couple of players and maybe stick a cross in. But and I think Evan Ferguson will have been improved physically from what he did. I thought he did some good stuff the other night against Finland, as Brian was saying. You could see he's starting to get a bit more match sharp, and I think he could play a big role tonight as well.
Stephen Dawn and Brian Kerr, I look forward to your next Premier League commentary, wherever that is. Hopefully next week.
Thanks a million, John. Not too sure.
I don't know when we're on again. It's all international stuff. I'm dazzled by international stuff.
Well, enjoy the night tonight, lads, and enjoy the match, and good to see you as always. Brian Kerr and Stephen Doyle there.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.